At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Omer El-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us on our second quarter 2014 conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Katib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaetan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started with the call, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Good morning or afternoon. Thank you for joining us on our call today. It's been a positive quarter for AGT and all of the operations of our company. After prolonged periods where macroeconomic conditions adversely affected our operations, impacting our earnings, we're pleased with the developments in our business over the recent periods, particularly over the past few quarters, where we've seen normalizing trends in our legacy business segments and the ramp-up of our new food ingredient and packaged food segment. AGT, through our expansions and acquisitions, has built a strong footprint of the right assets and facilities that, along with our strategy surrounding diversification and balance with respect to our operating geographies, product mixes, and global sales reach, is beginning to show the positive results for shareholder value that we always believed existed in our business. A number of key developments have led to the strong performance reported in quarter two by AGT. I'd like to ask Lori Ireland, our CFO, to provide some highlights for the quarter to frame it out. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. Hi there. Quarter two of 2014 saw an improvement in earnings per metric ton, with adjusted gross margin per metric ton improving from $79.89 for the three months ended March 31st, 2014, to $89.23 for the three months ended June 30th, 2014. EBITDA per metric ton improved from $44.17 for the three months ended March 31st, 2014, to $55.61 for the three months ended June 30th, 2014. Total inventory and accounts receivable days outstanding improved to 114 days for the six months ended June 30th, 2014, compared to 125 days for the six months ended June 30th, 2013. Non-cash foreign exchange includes a snapshot of outstanding foreign-denominated accounts receivables, accounts payable, as well as outstanding foreign exchange contracts, and includes the contract relating to the high-yield bonds. Note, this is a non-cash item and will fluctuate depending on the strength or weakness of foreign currencies when compared to the Canadian dollar. On the statement of comprehensive income, there are two foreign currency numbers: the gain of $12.7 million for the six months ended June 30th, 2014, relates to the mark-to-market adjustment on accounts receivable, accounts payable, and intercompany balances. The other comprehensive income of $3.4 million relates to foreign exchange differences on our foreign investments. AGT has a treasury process in place to ensure that the need to purchase foreign currencies to settle debt will be minimized if it will result in realized losses on foreign exchange. AGT tracks adjusted earnings per share as it is reported exclusive of the non-cash foreign exchange effects of our global business, whether that means a gain or a loss, because management feels that inclusion of both gains and losses that result from snapshot non-cash IFRS effects do not accurately reflect the cash flow-generating ability of our business. Adjusted earnings per share improved to $0.44 and $0.43 fully diluted for the three months ended June 30th, 2014, compared to $0.25 and $0.24 fully diluted for the three months ended June 30th, 2013, and $0.16 basic and fully diluted for the three months ended March 31st, 2014. General and administrative and marketing, sales, and distribution expenses have increased over the prior year. However, current year results include expenses related to growing operations in India, China, and Switzerland, as well as costs related to the new AGT Clique acquisition and continued growth in the food ingredients and packaged food segment. On a per metric ton basis, however, general and administrative and marketing, sales, and distribution expenses decreased from $40.29 per metric ton for the three months ended March 2014 to $38.36 for the three months ended June 30th, 2014, showing continued improvement in efficiencies as AGT grows. Management anticipates the combination of general and administrative and marketing, sales, and distribution expenses to be in the range of $15.5 million-$16 million per quarter going forward. Net debt decreased from $369.4 million at March 31, 2014, down to $335.7 million at June 30, 2014. In addition to lower accounts receivable and inventory levels, the company is utilizing various supplier payment programs and trade finance instruments, which are allowing for longer accounts payable cycles and the ability to pay down our operating credits. Metrics continue to be calculated for each facility, and performance targets are being tied to inventory and accounts receivable turns at each plant and country operations level. EBITDA for the 3 months ended June 30, 2014 was $24.4 million, compared to $13.9 million for the 3 months ended June 30, 2013, and compared to $17.1 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014. EBITDA as a percentage of revenue also improved to 6.79% for the 3 months ended June 30, 2014, compared to 5.63% for the 3 months ended June 30, 2013, and compared to 5.49% for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014. EBITDA improved to $74.1 million for the trailing 12 months ended June 30, 2014, and this compares to $63.5 million for the trailing 12 months ended March 31, 2014, and compares to $51.5 million for the trailing 12 months ended June 30, 2013. This improvement is demonstrating the success of AGT's global diversification strategy and the positive effects on AGT's earnings. Finally, of total operating credits available of approximately $179 million, approximately $119 million is drawn, leaving approximately $60 million available to draw at June 30, 2014. AGT and its subsidiaries are in compliance with all covenants at June 30, 2014. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. While our food ingredients platform is a focal point of our future strategy, our legacy pulses business continues to be a significant and strong performer for our company, providing the solid foundation on which AGT can grow and expand. We're encouraged by the continued and gradual recovery of global pulses and staple foods markets. The export statistics supporting our view of normalizing trends, particularly showing purchases and import volumes from markets that are not traditionally in the market in this time of the year, is important for the overall business of AGT. We have a significant asset base focused on this segment globally. We expect we will continue to provide opportunities and contributions with respect to revenues and earnings. Freight and logistics constraints reported earlier in the year that affected AGT and really all exporters and shippers in Western Canada's ability to send products to market have been substantially resolved. This has in part contributed to some of the margin improvements in quarter two that has allowed AGT to deliver a large program in this period, showing overall strength in our sales program, logistics, and our ability to capitalize on opportunities in the markets when they present themselves. This comes directly from AGT's ability to drive a significant commodity supply and distribution business globally with the right mix of well-placed assets globally and the experience in how to run the assets with the right mix of products, delivering through them freight and logistics strength to markets where products are in demand. This approach has been a cornerstone of AGT's strategy in our legacy business and our company overall. North American harvest is shaping up well, with significant production volumes expected again this year, with export volumes high, driven in part by what we would deem as impaired production in traditional markets. Supply at these levels is potentially needed to continue the program we see as a part of normalized market conditions in the upcoming period. However, as I've stated, our food ingredients platform is a focal point of our future strategy. In the past quarter, we announced our sales and marketing agreement with Ingredion, focused on sale and marketing of pulse ingredients globally through Ingredion's significant infrastructure. The agreement is intended to more rapidly develop market and sales opportunities for AGT's high-quality pulse ingredient products through Ingredion sales, marketing, and application research strength. It has a concentration on sales in foods for human consumption sectors such as baking, cereals, meat and meat analogs, pasta, snack and extruded foods, dips, soup, beverages, and convenience meals, as well as nutritional supplements, additives, and industrial food uses. These are sectors we feel that have significant potential for our pulse flours, protein, starches, and fibers produced in our Minot, North Dakota facility. The agreement is in addition to the established marketing agreement on protein for pet food and branded feed ingredients in North America with Cargill. The approach we have taken by adding marketing partners is intended to develop the sales program, but also intended to allow us to ramp up utilization at our Minot facility. Based on the success of these sales programs, we'll continue to evaluate and plan for capacity additions in Minot and also conversion in Canada, the U.S., and or Turkey to ingredient production, creating margin opportunities and utilizing our available capacity to the fullest. We feel there's significant opportunities for an integrated supply chain management approach to rapidly come to market and capture market share that generates real sales and earnings impact for the benefit of AGT shareholders, also creating high barriers to entry for other companies entering this market. Our retail packaged foods business with retail opportunities in Canada, the U.S., EU, and Turkey, and the Middle East North Africa region is continuing to grow. Traditional markets are starting to become interested in retail packaged goods, replacing the format of bulk shipments of the same pulse products and staple foods they've always been consuming. This is another opportunity we expect to grow in the coming periods. At our recent annual general meeting, a resolution to shareholders to change our company name to AGT Food and Ingredients Incorporated was passed. We have begun the name change process, and we expect to be completed in 2014. This name change is viewed as significant to our company, as it reiterates the focus we have on food and food ingredients as part of our business and better communicating the focus to our shareholders, our customers, our staff, and markets overall. We're optimistic that the normalizing trends and the growth and expansion plans we have initiated will contribute to AGT's ongoing success. Overall, we categorize consumer and customer demand for our commodities, our ingredients, and our retail food products as strong. Our management initiatives continue to provide the balance sheet management and cost containment effects that we intended, and we look forward to taking our strong strategy to implementation to capitalize on market opportunities we see ahead and to AGT's future as our new business segments grow and expand. I thank you for your continued interest in AGT, and I'd like to turn the call back over to Omar for our Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you, Murad. Operator, I think we'll take the first question.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star, then two. Our first question today comes from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. It's actually Dan Chu filling in for Steve this morning. Just a quick question here on your second half processing volume margins. We're seeing quite a few tailwinds here, as you guys sort of mentioned. Large crop carryover, positive outlook for another great harvest, and decongestion in the railroads, aided by some of the recent regulatory action. So just wondering if you might be able to give us your thoughts on where you think second half utilization rates and sales volumes might land versus the first half, given the strong backdrop. Thanks and congratulations on the great quarter.
Yeah, well, basically, I think that, you know, as you talk about tailwinds, I think that, you know, ultimately what we view is we actually just view it as the absence of the headwinds. So, you know, really much more of a normalized condition where we're seeing demand. You know, what we saw in the first half, in particular in March, April, May, June, was really non-traditional demand in a, non-traditional period where India harvests in March, April. Usually they're not in the market in these periods. You know, certainly is telling us that their harvest was not positive. Turkey is usually not in the market in these periods. We shipped good volumes of product into North Africa and Turkey and the Middle East during these periods. We expect the second half utilization to continue, you know, at similar levels to the first half. We see, you know, clear visibility on our sales program. We see, logistical constraints to be minimal leading up to the winter season. Once we get to November, December, we're back into the weather game again, you know, where extremely cold temperatures can certainly hamper some of the railway and even the plant efficiencies. It's not only about, you know, the railway slowing down, but when it's minus 47 degrees, we're a little slower on the way we're able to react as well. But we see good, strong second half demand, good utilization, good logistics, and looks like good availability of product. We're sitting today 28 degrees Celsius, a glorious Saskatchewan harvest, pre-harvest day. So we can almost hear the lentils growing and finishing today.
That's great. Thanks, Comrade.
The next question comes from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. So we saw this logistics premium in Q3 having a positive impact on margins. I'm just wondering whether that might sort of, or whether that could drift into Q3 or the back half of the year, or whether it was isolated in the quarter.
Just to clarify, Mark, I think you're asking about the logistics premium that was in Q2. Will it move forward in Q3 and 4?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, no, you said Q3. Just want to make sure I got your question
right.
Yeah,
Q2.
Yeah, so I think the answer is that there's a couple of things that I think we find. When we have a severe logistical constraint in the entire supply chain, you know, we attempted to use it as a wake-up call for the distribution in the world to say, look, you need to order in advance. You know, with all of the crops and the products that are competing for scarce transportation resources in a resource-rich country like Canada that is far from the ports in terms of the, you know, oil and gas, the minerals, and the agricultural commodities, people need to start forward booking and planning their logistics chain much more carefully. And, you know, what that's going to do for our business is we believe it's going to lead to more clear visibility in terms of our book into subsequent quarters. So, you know, we're trying to work in our system to convince our buyers to buy forward more, you know, regularly so that we're able to deliver a much more reliable, you know, logistical system for them. I think that, you know, the prompt shipment logistical premiums that we saw in the second quarter, we have a big infrastructure. So with a kind of a pent-up demand, we were able to ramp up margins, but we still see strong margins continuing in quarter three and quarter four. We think that these are normalized margins. And so, you know, from that perspective, we're optimistic in our ability to continue. This is not one of those scenarios, Mark, where we see quarter two, you know, we blew our brains out and shipped everything, and now there's no demand left for the rest of the year. Strong demand is remaining. Our order book is quite committed, and we are in a position where, you know, we're optimistic for the harvest starting in earnest within the next 5 to 10 days. Probably 7 to 10 days, we should be receiving good volumes of new crop in Canada.
Okay, and if I could just quickly shift to the food ingredient side in Minot. So running at 67% utilization at quarter end, and I imagine that's now higher. So I guess, you know, using line one as experience, you know, I guess we would have thought that line three would have been announced at sometime soon or by now. So can you give a little bit of color on that process, how that's developing, and maybe why we haven't seen that yet?
Well, I think that there's two things. I mean, we're certainly pleased with the ramp up of the utilization. You know, an interesting part of the equation in this was we built the plant in what we called kind of a plug and play, you know, model where we built all of the infrastructure and we left room for the second and third lines. So when we put the second line in and we plugged it in, you know, we were ready to start producing within, say, 45 to 60 days. And so we've proven out that our design works. The second line is developing out as planned in terms of quality, quantity, you know, all of the things that we measure in terms of a successful integration. Utilization is ramping up. Sales program on our flours and our starch flours, you know, are continuing to keep pace. We're seeing strong forward demand for protein, and we're very happy with Ingredion and Cargill as our global partners in this commercialization. The work right now, and, you know, in my conference call comments, I was quite clear about, you know, our intentions to continue looking at expansions of Minot, and also, you know, we're working on feasibilities on conversion of other facilities. You know, I expect more clarity to come in the coming weeks and coming couple of months. What really is our focus right now is defining with our partners what's the capacity that we're going to augment first? Because the third line in Minot has the potential to augment our flours portfolio and not at the fractions portfolio, for instance. So, if, you know, we are seeing a ramp up of demand for semolinas and flours, you know, that's complementing our protein, our starch, and our fibers. So we may end up deciding that that's the first or the third augmentation instead of just a traditional fractionation. So we're expecting that decision to come, you know, fairly quickly. I'm quite optimistic with the ingredient announcement that, you know, I mean, as you say, I think there's expectations that the announcement would have come by now. No reason to be concerned. Things are tracking very well, and we're very happy with the partnerships that we've signed.
Okay. Thanks very much, and congrats.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Keith Carpenter of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning out west. Investors this morning, if I could phrase the question this way, and we've talked about this already, but can you comment on your Q2 processing segment earnings where you did $19 million in EBITDA versus $11 million in Q1? Can you quantify if there were factors to an extent that you think had they not been there, you could have done mildly lower and given X EBITDA in the quarter? If you could quantify it to that extent, is that possible?
Well, you know what, Keith, I think that the one thing I can't do when it's really this positive is, you know, when we have the negative factors, like let's say the rail constraints that we had in quarter four and quarter one, I think we said, you know, $1.5 million to $2 million negative effect. If I look at this logistical premium that we kind of talked about earlier, you know, it's probably a couple of $1 million effect, you know, where we were able to capture some prompt delivery premiums because we have a very strong logistical system that we run under. And that, you know, we are a very large container shipper globally. We were able to capture, you know, part of the strategy is origins to be in place. You know, when Canada was constrained, Australia was shipping, you know, in shorter transit periods and capturing some premiums, you know, in the period of the second quarter. So, you know, while I see it, you know, those factors, they're all the interaction of the strength of our platform. So I don't consider them necessarily aberrations or, you know, one-time effects on the quarter. I think that we had certainly had a good, you know, conglomeration of effects that led to us, you know, delivering out this earnings. But we're optimistic that, you know, we can continue to show, you know, positive trends from 2013 when we compare the 2014 periods. So if I look at quarter three of 13 and quarter four of 13, you know, we are expecting the demand and margin circumstances to dictate our ability to continue to improve last year over this year.
Can you guys, switching to the food ingredients, again, just an extension of your previous comments, as you guys look to, you know, as internally as you look at this and your growth and where you're moving next, and I'm assuming that has entails a discussion with both Cargill and Ingredion, is there a scenario where it's possible, it may not happen in the next quarter or two, but is there a scenario where, you know, we could sit here a year from now and you would look back and say, you know what, or look forward and say, you know, we've had this discussion with Ingredion and things are probably going to ramp faster or maybe even materially faster than we would have thought back in the summer of 2014?
The answer is that, you know, it's pretty early in the game, but I think that the trends in the food ingredient business are aligning to a point where the trends are unrefutable. These are not fad trends that we're following. It's global race to protein. It's non-GMO ingredients. It is lower allergen concentrations. You know, so the replacement of soy, gluten, or wheat, corn. You know, these are large trends that are all converging, you know, in one instance where, you know, I do view this as, you know, a generational opportunity in our company where we're going to have this opportunity once to build something that I think is going to become a very big part of mainstream food in the world. And as a first mover, yes, there's potential that the ramp up can go
significantly faster. And, you know, our job right now is to have the right partnerships to be able to react to the scale up as needed. Now, Keith, you've known us for many years. Our style was always to go it alone. The food ingredient ramp up potential is large enough that we want to be ready to capitalize on it if it comes quicker. That's why we took partners, because this could become a much bigger game where, you know, the time to market, which I do view as the main barrier to entry, you know, can come quickly, and we'll be ready to react with Ingredion and with Cargill.
Perfect. If I could just ask one quick question. Can you provide us with your past operating rate in the quarter, or would you know that offhand?
The past operating rate in which quarter? Like the utilization?
Q2, yes.
Yeah, I think if you calculate out our pulses, we're probably running around 85, actually. It was quite a high utilization rate.
Perfect. Thanks.
The next question comes from John Chu of AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Just wanted to kind of focus on the capacity utilization rates here. And I know the focus for everyone has really been on post-ingredients and what that can do to your overall utilization rates at your existing plants. But I noticed that in the MD&A, there was talk about feeding your fully processed products for canning and packaging and whatnot for retail as another means to boost utilization rates. So just wondering, you know, how big of an initiative could that be to help fix the or improve the utilization rates? What could it cost, and what kind of margins could that add to if you were looking at that route?
Yeah, I mean, a really good question, John. I think that ultimately what we're seeing is, you know, we're seeing, you know, some trends that I think we really can't ignore on that side as well. We're seeing, you know, traditional markets. You know, so that means the traditional pulses markets that we deal in, you know, are starting to become much more retail focused. And so from that perspective, you know, what we're seeing is, you know, kind of this trend that we discuss in our MD&A about this mass retail grocery sector, you know, growth. So the gravitation towards mass retail and, you know, if we look at what we see in markets, let me give you an example. You know, the retail market here in North America, we look at 500-gram packages, 1 kg packages. But if you look at, you know, let's say the distribution of Loblaws, and you look at, you know, in Regina here, we have a chain called Superstore, which is owned by Loblaw. I was there on the weekend, and we see much more prevalence of 5 kg packing even within the retail market here, where it's becoming a cash and carry market. Well, you can now look back at Egypt and realize that the red split lentils in Egypt are going to 10 kg packaging. You know, we're seeing, you know, Sri Lanka market, you know, looking at that type of change as well. You know, we're seeing the growth in retail packaging in India. You know, one of the large conglomerates in India has launched a retail pulses home delivery service, if you can believe it, where people aren't even going to go to the market anymore. They're having their pulses delivered to their homes. So, you know, when we look at the mainstream, you know, the mainstream nature of these products in places like North America and Western Europe coming into our trend, and we look at the traditional markets, you know, size is getting smaller. That's their retail market. It's cash and carry. We see that as being an opportunity. I mean, our assets are ready to produce products that are ready for consumption. And if you look at part of our G&A and our cost structure, although we're talking about keeping the line on costs, and Gaetan, you can help me out on this one. How many plants did we do our quality certifications in North America over the last year? Seven? Yeah.
Seven, yeah.
We did seven plants in North America that we got FSSC 22,000 food safety certification. So that means we are ready now under, you know, the quality certifications required by every major retailer to go directly to retail pack and can. So the capital cost is small, But the impact is take away some of the utilization from commodity business and put it into higher value uses. That's a strategy of this upmarket, you know, nature of where we're taking the platform. So, you know, the utilization this quarter was 85. We had great margin. What we want is we want utilization to be 85 all the time and the product mix to be in higher value, you know, quality conscious markets, product mix that balances, and geographies that are willing to pay for the quality. You know, I've said, John, I think in one of the things I spoke with in your conference, you know, I said tongue-in-cheek at one point, if I look at the India market, I only care about the 300 million richest Indians, right? I don't really look at it as a 1.1 billion person market because the 800,000 lower income, they may not be my target. I don't have the product I have to sell to everybody. I want the people who want large caliber chickpeas that are cleaned properly, you know, good quality products. Those are the segments that we're attacking.
Okay, great. And then just any additional information on the feasibility studies that you can share that you've seen thus far?
Yeah, the feasibility studies on the conversion of Regina or Williston, North Dakota, or the addition of lines at Turkey is going well. We're expecting to probably present to our board in the November board meeting or the early New Year board meeting. So we've been focusing on costing. We want to confirm our time to market and that our brownfield construction costs will be materially lower than our greenfield costs have been. So that'll allow us then to react to the ramp up needed under the Ingredion and Cargill agreements. I think it's going well. Even the Minot operation just proves to us what we need to do in the ramp up of our new facilities, because really what we're planning to do is take our splitting capacities and augment them into Ingredient. And so it's going well, John.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question comes from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Just with respect to the Minot facility, if you look ahead to when that facility is fully deployed with all three lines, what's your best guess right now as to how the sales would break down between Cargill, Ingredion, and then whatever you guys are doing directly yourselves?
Oh, that's a good question because we're early on in the Ingredion agreement. But, you know, certainly the growth segment coming now is going to be in the food sector. And so when we look at today, if you look at a hypothetical third line being added, if we're looking at two-thirds utilization of line two, today we're sitting at about, say, 55% utilization of a larger three-line facility. And so it's just about just over half utilization today. Today the mix would be probably, in my guess, we would be 70% pet food and feed and 30% human food. And I would expect that mix to go to 50-50, you know, as we ramp up. So really that tells you the additional capacity being added is focused in the food sector. We're optimistic on, you know, some good opportunities in particular, as I mentioned in my comments, extruded snacks, meaning the production of snack foods and breakfast cereals, is an opportunity that is unfolding quickly, you know, where we have seen a number of new launches of products, you know, that are including, you know, pulse ingredients, the meat and meat analogs. You know, it's all about binders and meat fillers, so natural meat fillers that give an ability to look at that to look at that opportunity unfolding. And then we also you know, see the pasta opportunity, and that's not our pasta necessarily, it's pasta companies continuing down the line of healthy pastas as providing some very good entry points. And all of those sectors, Anup, that I just mentioned are actually, you know, potentially higher volume segments in the food side. So when you have inclusion, it's not low inclusion, it's higher rates of inclusion. That's what we need in terms of volume. We're quite optimistic that Ingredient's going to help us get there a lot faster.
Okay, so just so I'm clear on your answer, so you think that when you're up and running, it'll be split roughly 50-50 then between Cargill and Ingredion?
No, I said between food and pet food applications. Because remember, Cargill only markets the protein. So it's probably about 30% Cargill, right? And then about 50% Ingredion and about 20% AGT.
Okay. And then just in terms of Ingredion, can you just tell us roughly today, what are they doing to advance the partnership with AGT?
Well, we've been engaged in a number of different planning meetings with them. Of course, we have a large pipeline of projects that are ongoing with almost all the major food companies in the world. And so what we were doing in the first month of this agreement, Anoop, is we're doing what we call the customer strategy downloads. So we need to actually take Ingredion's focus with these clients, our current projects, mold them together into a penetration strategy. And so North America happened in three different meetings in July. We launched a European strategy launch last week in Germany. And the China launch is scheduled for, I think, the 12th of September. So, really what we expect is by end of September, early October, commercial products under the Ingredion partnership are going to be available to the market into their distribution. So it's progressing exactly as planned. We love the partnership. Their R&D and application development capability is, incredibly advanced. So couple that with our knowledge of pulses, and we have a winning team.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll hand the call back over to Omar Al-Khatib for closing comments.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on our second quarter call. For those of you that are still on the call, if you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to contact us at our Regina head office. We'd be happy to follow up with you. Again, thanks for attending our conference call, and I wish you all a very good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.